What's up, iRaiders? Welcome to episode 9 of iRations, The Uplifter. My name is Drake Peterson, and for those of you who are joining us for the first time, this is our weekly podcast. We are on YouTube every Friday starting at 3:20 Pacific time to raise your spirits, answer questions, talk music, talk shop, and of course talk all things iRation. Today's episode is part 2 of Origins. Last week, we learned all about the early days of iRation, how everybody met, and how the band was formed. Today, we are going to be talking about Kai's exiting of the band, Automatic, the induction of Micah Brown, Hodding Up, the addition of myself, the self-titled album, and a few stories leading up to today. Before we learn some iRation history, we're going to get to some news. Starting today, if your preferred method of consumption for programs such as this happens to be through your favorite podcast app, you are now in luck. You can now listen to The Uplifter with enhanced audio on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all major podcast streaming services. These episodes will be released every Friday. To be reminded about these episodes, you can go to your preferred app and click the subscribe button right now. And for those of you watching on YouTube, click the link in the description below to see all the apps The Uplifter podcast can be found on. Last week, we launched the Honorary Crew Tee. Our crew is very grateful. These have been selling quite well. If you're not sure what this is, it's a great tee that you can buy, and all the proceeds will go to our wonderful iRation crew. If you buy this, you can get a free digital copy of the album Coastin', which is the 7th studio album, out July the 10th, just a few more weeks away from that release. If you have not pre-ordered or pre-saved Coastin', you can click the link below, or you can find it on iTunes or Spotify, or you can just visit irationmusic.com. All right, now, first of all, it's great to see all of you guys. How's everybody holding up?
Good.
Solid.
Kaysen, how's Hawaii right now?
Nice. It's hot, as usual.
Per usual.
Case, did you get a quarantine cut?
Oh, I just decided to use what people are calling a comb.
Oh, you showered. Oh, sweet.
I heard of it the other day. I figured I'd give it a try.
I believe it's pronounced comba.
Comb?
Comb. The B is actually not silent.
Oh, let's see.
I really enjoyed watching everybody's Instagram takeovers this week. So hopefully there will be much more of that in the future days. So last week we ended with Time Bomb being released in 2010, and how much of a pivoting point it was for the band. I'm going to start with Mr. Joe D. What do you think made Time Bomb so successful?
Well, I'd say it was a combination of our minimal past experience in writing music and recording songs, combined with a few of the boys going to work with Charles Brotman, and sort of learning songwriting, song structure, and basic song composition. And that combined with like a little bit of experience on the road and a little bit of an increase in musicianship just kind of sort of was the catalyst for that album, I think.
Poosh, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I think Time Bomb, what really helped Time Bomb was I think that we kind of had somewhat of an idea of what our image of the band was and what we wanted to do sound wise. You know, we had Kai, we had kind of the remaining guys in the group, the foundation of what we were trying to do. Having two singers, having Kai and I had been singing since we were young, since we were in high school together. So, you know, that was always a nice, like, you know, being able to like harmonize with each other. He had a higher pitched voice than I did, so then having like two vocals were, you know, his voice suited different songs. He was writing good songs, and that helped too. And then I think that we just kind of committed to a sound. I think we committed to not trying to be something that we weren't, and we just went with the songs that we were writing at the time. You know, it was a mix of reggae, rock, and pop, and kind of other things, and we weren't kind of holding ourselves back. I think that was a big part of it. I think just being secure in what our sound was and what we were, the songs that we were writing. I think that translated, and obviously songs like Time Bomb, Falling, you know, those songs hold up to this day. So wait and see, you know, all those songs just kind of turn around. They all just kind of still, people still love them. And, yeah, I think that was a big part of it.
Those songs definitely hit super hard. When Iration is touring, you will see not one but two buses rolling into the venue. Obviously, this is a huge accomplishment for any band to pull off. But before the days of touring the world in a luxurious bus, there were the van days. I've heard some really great stories in the van, from you guys eating Subway all the time to everyone getting locked out of the van when actually Adam happened to be asleep in the van. Also, there's some really good prank stories. Unfortunately, though, the van days didn't have the best ending. On October 27th, 2011, while on tour with Tomorrow Bad Seeds and Through the Roots, the van flipped. Adam, can you tell us about this experience and what exactly happened?
Yeah, I mean, what was kind of crazy was it was when we were kind of getting a little bit of success off the album, and I think we were already planning on moving into a bus pretty soon, but we were like, hey, we're gonna do this last one in the van. And I remember Micah actually had slept on the other band's bus that night. So typically in a sleeping scenario while we were driving overnight, you know, you'd have a pilot and a co-pilot. Colin would be on that front bench, and then we had removed the two-seater so you could put a futon there, and then we had a bunk bed in the back that we had built. So what I remember specifically is we'd kind of driven all night through a snowstorm that was really heavy and kind of whiteout conditions. And then when we'd finally gotten through to a straightaway, our driver, Brian, he had fallen asleep. And I remember I was sleeping where Micah used to sleep. And so there was nobody in the co-pilot seat. So there was the driver and then Colin behind him. And I remember waking up because I felt the rumble strips on the right side start hitting, which were directly under me. And we were hitting them, and I kind of sat upright. And then I think at that point, our driver woke up and turned the wheel too hard to the left. And I remember looking out to the right, and the trailer actually came. It swung out so much that the trailer was kind of skidding sideways. I could see it out of the right window, which was bizarre. And then all of a sudden, just this momentum of the van just going like this and flopping over to its side. And at that point, so we were in a Dodge Sprinter, which if you see like those FedEx cars, they have a really big side panel or a window there. At one point, I was standing on that glass window, and a cop later said, he's like, if that glass had broken, I would have been sucked under the van and gotten absolutely vaporized. Micah would have been sitting in the front right seat, I believe, and that window did smash, and had anyone been sitting there, it could have been really bad. The back, I believe, was, and Joe, correct me if I'm wrong, it was you and King were back there?
No, Kai and I were up top. King was down below
with Kaysen.
Someone else.
With me, I was down.
It was Kaysen in the pit. It was,
yeah,
right? Kaysen,
King. Yeah, Case.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so when the van slid, it finally stopped, and I remember all this, I thought it was smoke, but it was actually kind of like steam from something in the engine or the air conditioner or something, but the steam was coming in, and we were in our sleeping clothes, so I didn't have any footwear on, and we basically, because the slider was down, that window was closed, the only way to get out was through the front windshield, so we ended up kicking it out, crawling out, and then I remember going to the side of the freeway and then realizing, wait, where are the rest of the guys? And they were still in the back, trapped, and luckily a motorist had pulled over with a crowbar and opened it to free them. But you know, it was such a like traumatic thing, I didn't even really think, wait, there's still, the guys are in there. We were barefoot, just like so shooken up.
Yeah, Joe King and I were in the pit, which is the bottom bunk, and when we flipped on the side, we had got trapped in there. There was like no escape, and we could hear the guys outside going, get out of the van, and King and I were like kicking the door as hard as we can, and it's not opening, and we're like, okay, like a minute passed. We're like, okay, we're still alive. We haven't gotten hit. So let's find our like phones and wallets and maybe put on some shoes. And then by that time, someone had gotten the door open. But yeah, very scary.
And immediately after that, you guys switched to a bus. Is that correct, Poosh?
Well, it's funny because we had gone on a tour with Revolution like the year before, and we really wanted to be on a bus. We felt like we were ready, and we had pushed, and we squeezed like every cent out of our budget to make it happen. So we got on the bus, and then we got snowed in St. Louis, Missouri. A huge storm came by, and we got stuck in a parking lot in St. Louis, and it threw our budget off, and we ended up having to unpack our bus in Atlanta. We had to have somebody drive our van all the way out, take all of our stuff out of the bus, put it in the van, and switch from a bus to a van mid-tour, which was awful.
Depressing.
And then,
yeah, if you can imagine the visual of, we were playing at the Masquerade in Atlanta, and they had a hell stage, which is the small room. We were playing the hell stage, and you see this beautiful white tour bus with all of our gear in front of it just pull away, and then right behind it is like our van. It's like one of those
we were like
fixer-upper reveals.
We were a tweak, but we all were like kind of laughing at the same time because it was just like such a like awful thing. But yeah, so that tour was actually the last. We were like, okay, we need to do one more tour in a van just to make money, save money. You know, it was, you know, we just weren't quite there yet financially to do it. So this was actually the last tour that we were planning on being in a van. And I was like so tired of touring in a van because I was sleeping in a beanbag chair, like right next to the door every night. And it was like just everyone was, you know, it's just uncomfortable. All of us in the van, we were maxed out as far as how many people could fit in there. And with crew, we needed more crew. We needed, you know, we were just starting to get to the point where we needed to upgrade. And so yeah, that happened, and it was kind of like a sign, I think, that was like, okay, you know, you've literally ran the bashful Yeti into the ground. So now a bus picked us up, and we finished the tour in a bus. It was like four more gigs or something like that. And then from that point on, we just were in a bus. I think we kind of forced to, because it didn't really make sense to buy another van at that point.
Side note, we did have a show that night that we made it to and played in Salt Lake City, I believe.
Yeah, so just to kind of tie that up, I was sleeping on Tomorrow's Bad Seeds had a bus. They had this old Eagle bus that was like a super old. It was like a bus from Almost Famous. Like it looked one of those tour buses. And I was getting sick. Like my voice, I was starting to lose my voice, and I was starting to get a cold. So I was like, and it was a long drive. It was from Denver to Salt Lake City. So I was like, dude, I need to sleep in the bus because the van is so cold at night and like dry. If I sleep in there, I'm not going to sleep, and I'm going to get sick probably, and we're going to get screwed for the last few shows. So I slept in the front lounge of the Tomorrow's Bad Seeds bus, and at like 7 in the morning, I get a call from Kai, and he's like, dude, I'm like, what's up? He's like, dude, we just flipped the van. And I was like, are you serious? Like, is everyone okay? He's like, yeah, everyone's okay. I was like, holy shit. So I told their bus driver, we flipped around on the freeway. I think it was like the 70, flipped around, drove back. Tomorrow's Bad Seeds had their like short bus that they toured in for a long time. So we turned around, went back. We drove back an hour to where the van had crashed. And we like stuffed all of the gear into their trailers and into the bays of their bus and made it. We all packed into the Bad Seeds front lounge. And we made it to the show that night.
And what was crazy was the trailer actually was upside down, but because everything was packed like so Tetris tight, the gear was totally fine. It basically just went like you flipped it upside down and everything was totally fine.
Well, thank God everyone is okay. And stay on the bus, okay? No more van days. I want to go back to 2012 and the recording of the Automatic album. Hits such as One Way Track, Back Around, Mr. Operator, and also the track Automatic can be heard on that record. Poosh, can you talk a little bit about this album? There were a few notable collabs with some badass artists. Is that correct?
Yeah. Actually, this is one of the first times we hung out with MB too, just another side note, but Yeah, we worked with, we were lucky enough to work with Lincoln Parrish, who at the time was in the band Cage the Elephant, and they were kind of coming off having one of the biggest hits in the country, you know, Ain't No Rest for the Wicked, and then I can't remember what the second song was called off the top of my head because I'm brain fog, but it was
Shake Me Down.
Yeah, so it was giant, biggest hits, you know, radio hits in the country, alternative radio. So working with him, he was very young. I think he was 21, 22 at the time. He was younger than us. And we rented a studio in Woodland. We rented a house in Woodland Hills. And we all stayed at, we had two different houses that we stayed in because we had to move in the middle of it because they could, the rental ran out of, we only had it for like a week and then we had another week at another house. And we recorded at Rami Jaffe's studio, which was just down the road. He's the keyboard player for the Wallflowers, and he plays keys in the Foo Fighters. And yeah, it was, we worked with Lincoln, and then the rest of it, we cut there. It was a pretty awesome experience. Just, we grinded for 2 weeks recording a bunch of the songs with Lincoln at that studio. We wrote them there, a lot of them. The rest of the songs were written in Hawaii. You know, a couple of them were written. Kai and I sat down and wrote in my living room in Hawaii. Just like grind, we grinded. We played. We had a stage set up with all of our instruments. We'd write the song. We'd come up with something. We'd jam them, and then we'd go in and cut. Joe would cut the drums, and we just, it was just that kind of session. But yeah, it was half there, and then the other half we recorded at Castaway 7 in Ventura with JP, who we did all of Time Bomb with. So it was a kind of a good mixture of those things.
Well, Automatic was released July 2013, but before that, on April 5th, 2013, Iration announced that Kai would be leaving the band. I'm going to be reading Kai's farewell. He said, "I have nothing but love and respect for each of the guys in our crew, and it's been a true pleasure performing, working, traveling, and living with them over the course of our journey up to this point. From our first shows in Isla Vista to my last show in Phoenix, it's been so real, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart. I love you all." Kaysen, what was your initial reaction to Kai leaving, and was there any animosity towards him amongst the rest of the band?
No, there was no animosity towards him. I think with Kai, for about the year leading up to that, I think we could all kind of sense that he was kind of just not really as happy as he was in the beginning, kind of touring and all that. He had started working with his mom, and I think he had his sights kind of set on moving back to the Big Island and kind of just living a simpler life. One aspect that did kind of throw us off a bit was that we had recorded songs with him singing on Automatic, on the album Automatic. And before we released it, he let us know that that was the decision he was going to make. And we basically had to take the songs that he was singing on and decide, okay, are these songs still going to be on the album? Are we going to try to re-record the songs? Are we going to keep the songs and just have Micah sing them? So that was, you know, a little bit of something that we had to work around. But I think in the end, it ended up being, you know, good the way it all happened. And you know, we're all super happy for Kai, and we're all really good friends, and we talk every day on the fantasy football stream, mostly shit talking, but
hooky.
Yeah, but yeah, no, he seems very happy over here. He's a farmer, and yeah, that's Kai boy.
Well, now enters Mr. Micah Brown. Micah Brown, your first show with the band was in Las Vegas at the Cosmopolitan on June 6, 2013. Can you talk about the days leading up to the show, how you ended up on that stage, and why it seemed to be such a perfect fit?
Yeah, I mean, basically, we were in discussions about me opening up as a solo acoustic artist for the Automatic summer tour that they were going to be embarking on in support of that new album. And I was kind of pitching for a spot on the bus so that I didn't have to come up with my own transportation just being a solo artist, it would have been a lot easier for me to just kind of be a stowaway on their bus, and I wasn't getting paid that much, so it would have been an easier way for me to actually make a little bit of money on the tour. So I was kind of talking to Michael, our manager, and just saying, hey, is there any room for me on the bus? That was kind of a hinge point for me, like, for sure taking the tour. And he was telling me, you know what, yeah, there might be, but we're looking for a new member of the band because Kai left the band, so we want to replace him permanently. And I kind of tongue-in-cheek just threw out the idea, like, I'll play guitar, because he said that you guys wanted to have a second guitarist, which is something that you had been missing since Kato left years before. And so I felt like I could just at least do that. And I kind of threw it out there, like, yeah, I could do that. I could play guitar. I can sing backups. I was saying whatever I should say to get the spot on the tour, basically. And he came back to me and said, you know, we're looking for like a permanent fix. We're not looking for a temporary stopgap solution. And, you know, I kind of thought about it for a little bit and started thinking to myself, like, well, I would be interested in a permanent spot in the band, because for me, at the point I was at as a solo artist, I was missing that kind of camaraderie of a band that a band provides. And so I was thinking to myself, that would be pretty cool. I haven't been in a band since high school, and it'd be kind of fun to change it up instead of just doing solo stuff, you know, have this other outlet. And so it started out, you know, like the discussions kind of progressed, and everybody was like, yeah, if you're interested, we're interested. That would save us, you know, doing tryouts, and it would make everything a lot easier. It would be a smooth kind of way to get the ball rolling on that. And so it started out as a kind of a temporary trial, you know, trial run to see how it went. So, yeah, and I think May or June, we all decided, let's do it. And I remember going to my first rehearsal with the guys at Velvet Jones, and we rehearsed that weekend, or that week leading up to that Vegas show. And we still had, I think JP still played that show with us too. So JP was on the organs, and I was on the other side of Jody and playing, you know, I had my amp to the right of me. I still was playing a Fender Twin. And on top of it, I had like a notebook with notes, because it was like a crash course. I still didn't know all the chords to every song. And I was kind of just looking over to like this road case with like papers all sorted out on it, just so I could make sure I didn't play the wrong notes on certain songs. So it was kind of a whirlwind, you know. It was pretty crazy, but it was a lot of fun. Like you said, we played with Revolution at the Cosmo Pool. It was quite a fun first gig to play. And then shortly after, we did that summer tour. And yeah, I think at the end of that Automatic tour, I was on board, and everybody just wanted to make sure our personalities would mesh. And, you know, aside from the musical aspects, just the personal aspects of having someone join your band, there's a lot of question marks at first. You got to have to kind of make sure that certain things are going to flow, especially bringing someone into a road situation where you're all living together on a bus. You don't want to just jump into anything willy-nilly. So I think once we all realized, like, I kind of assimilated right into the family there, it felt like a good thing.
That's amazing. Well, you're definitely a great addition, and I know everyone's very happy with you and the band.
Yeah.
Now we're going to talk about Hotting Up 2014-2015, where Iration wrote and recorded with not one but two new people in the mix. Obviously, the first being Micah Brown, and the second was producer King David, who, for those of you who don't know, has produced all of the albums except for Double Up after that. Poosh, can you talk about Hotting Up? This album was definitely more rock-heavy than any of the previously recorded albums.
Yeah, I mean, I think Automatic maybe had a rock vibe that was kind of similar. I think basically with Hotting Up, it had been 3 years. We were working on 3 years since we put out an album, and we knew just in the way that music is consumed now that we needed to be a little quicker with the turnaround with albums, more in the every 2 year vibe. And so we knew it was time to put something out. We, you know, had been going through the changes with, you know, post-Automatic with MB. We'd been doing a lot of touring during that stretch. So there really hadn't been like a massive chunk of time for us to like sit down, write, record. We had kind of just come to the end of our creative process with JP. I think that we'd done so many things, and we kind of wanted you know, with MB joining the band, we kind of wanted to, like, and we kind of sensed that our sound was changing a little bit. And Mike, our manager, had pushed us to work with Dave before, before Automatic, and we ended up working with it was Dave and Lincoln at the same time. We ended up working with Lincoln, and then afterwards we kind of met back up with Dave and started to kind of feel it out again just to see what would happen. And we kind of started to feel like, okay, this could work. And I had a bunch of songs that I had been working on just on my own, and then we did a session of writing in Santa Barbara at our practice studio. I think we kind of all got together and jammed some stuff and tried to come up with some things. And we also just did it in the studio where we jam on chords and try to write while we were in the studio. We recorded majority of the album at East West in Hollywood. And especially we did a lot of the drums and the bass and guitars there. Yeah, and it definitely was a different process working with Dave. I mean, he just is a different type of writer. He's a different player. He comes from a different musical background. I think his, you know, he comes from R&B, hip-hop, kind of those worlds. He's like an understudy of Scott Storch and kind of those areas of the pop world. And so it was definitely a change for us working with him, working with drum loops and working with different sounds and, this is the way that he kind of pieces songs together. But ultimately we realized that his ear is very, very good. And musically he's trained and he's a really, really talented piano player in his own right. So, Hotting Up was something that it was done with a little bit of a time crunch. You know, we didn't really do a lot of pre-pro or writing. We just kind of went in and tried to knock it out as fast as we could. We had what we felt was a deadline because we had to go on tour, and it ended up being, you know, we wrote somewhere in the neighborhood of like 12 songs or 13 songs, and we ended up cutting it back to 9 just because those were the 9 that we felt were good enough to be on an album. And I know it was short of what most people would want from an album, but we just didn't want to put out anything that we felt half, you know, good about. But yeah, it was the first time we'd also worked with MB as a writer, been in the studio with him for a full session. So that was just overall, it was just a really new experience. I think working with Dave, working with MB, just a different process all around for everybody. I think that was kind of one of the things about Hotting Up that made it interesting, but also made it, you know, challenging, was that we were all going through this experience, you know, for the first time, essentially, with different people.
We have a fan question, and this one's directed right to JoJo. If any of you guys have any questions, you can always hit us up at 805-225-6886. And Joe, they ask, Hotting Up is my favorite album because of Joe's sound on the drums. Joe, how did you get the drums to sound so big on Hotting Up?
Years of tuning. No. EQ.
Who's saying money?
Lots of EQ, polish. No, there was a combination of King David being there and having a preconceived thought about the tone of the drums we were trying to go for to achieve the overall sound for the song. So that was half of it. And the other was just my go-to kit I use today, touring and everything, recording.
Well, what about the drum doctor? Because, you know, when you talk about drum doctor.
I forgot about that guy. So yeah, East West, we hired a guy to, like, you can literally pick from a catalog of drum kits, snares, everything. And I picked what I felt I was comfortable with and would sound good. And I think it was some kind of like vintage Yamaha kit. And he brought with him like 6 or 8 vintage snares. They were all just insane. So that was really fun to just go through all those snares and achieve different tones and sounds. I mean, the kit came like flawlessly tuned and like ready to go, basically. I can't remember what song it was, but like somebody was in the booth like, "You're not hitting hard enough, like hit harder." And then I broke the snare head, and that was it for that snare. So yeah.
So funny enough, Hotting Up was released on August 28th, 2015, which happens to be the very first day that I met all of you guys. I'm not sure if you guys remember, but you were all playing a show in Denver at Riot Fest, and a good friend of mine, Jeff, was doing some business with you guys with his app. In exchange for a little ride on his family's private jet. Luckily, I happened to be invited on that private jet, and that's where I first met, who did I meet first? I think it was Adam and MB, I think? I can't remember. There's a picture here that we're going to post.
Whoever rode.
It was Joe and I.
Yeah, Joe and Adam rode out, and then I think Marina and I hitched a ride on the way back for whatever reason.
And Case and I rode in the back of a UPS truck.
and had to hear about the PJ nonstop.
Yeah, because Joe and I had a flight booked out of Santa Barbara, and I kind of just didn't take the flight, took the train down to Orange County, jumped on the PJ, went to Denver, and I just assumed my return flight would still be valid and all good. And I get to the airport, and they're like, no, you've already, like, given up your flight. And I was supposed to go to Denver to LA and then LA straight to Honolulu. So I had to end up buying myself a brand new flight from Denver, and luckily just made my Honolulu connection, but it ended up being this whole big thing.
That's hilarious. Well, I had been pestering Michael, the manager, for about a year after that, just saying, hey, I want to come and play. Didn't hear anything back, and then a few months later, Michael called me asking if I wanted to play Shoreline Jam in Long Beach. I, of course, said yes, and after that, you guys just pretty much kept me. After that, there were a couple shows, I think, like, you guys had done Bottle Rock, but I wasn't on that one, but I started, I think, in January of that next year. Adam, what made you guys want to have a horn, and had Iration experimented with any other additions like horns or strings prior to that show?
I think our first kind of experimentation was going back to the Automatic album, the song Mr. Operator I had done in my hometown of Kailua with Brad, who plays bass for The Green. He had layered his own horn with a synth horn, and we hadn't really had horns much, correct me if I'm wrong, on our songs before that, but we were kind of in a place where we did want to experiment more with different instrumentation. And then I believe once that kind of was introduced, then we kind of started to write a little more with that kind of mindset of having a horn.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad you guys made that choice. It's been fun. In 2018, the self-titled album Iration was released. Kaysen, can you tell us a little bit about this album and what stands out most to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think like Micah was saying, touching back on Hotting Up, that it was kind of a fresh new experience with working with new people, and we were kind of trying to figure out the way it all sort of meshed together. And then I think by the time we recorded the self-titled album, we had kind of figured it out, and working with King David and also working on writing together as a group. And then, yeah, we just kind of got in the studio and threw all these songs together. It was a long album because I think we all kind of, we all kind of had our opinion on the direction that we should be going. And so I think that's why that album overall kind of is pretty eclectic, you know. Each song kind of has its own sort of vibe, kind of different style of music. But I think we felt like at that point we wanted to call it the self-titled album because we felt like it kind of encompassed everything that we were capable of making at that point. And yeah, it was a fun record to make. It was all, it was pretty easy, and we kind of wanted to be like, this is us now. So this is our band. This is how we're going to sound going forward. And put it out there as that manner, as Iration, the record. So, yeah, it was fun.
Good
fun.
MB, how was the experience recording this album compared to the experience recording Hotting Up? Did you feel like you had a little more involvement?
Yeah, I definitely just felt more comfortable bringing my experience and my knowledge and my opinions to the table. I think Hotting Up, like they were saying, I had toured with Automatic since I joined the band, but I wasn't part of making that album besides just hanging out in the studio a couple times. But so Hotting Up, it was like I was getting my feet wet with them. I didn't want to step on any toes. King David was there and he had his kind of direction that he was bringing to the table. So I brought one song to the table for Hotting Up, and I felt like it had a pretty good response from everybody. So round two with the self-titled, I just, I was able to like feel much more comfortable with bringing ideas or letting my voice be heard at least. And so, yeah, I think like Kaysen was saying, it was definitely a kind of a stamp of the kind of the new sound of Iration, with you involved, having horns on multiple tracks. Certain songs were written as a band, like with the music first. Certain songs were a beat first that King David came up with. Certain songs were Micah on an acoustic. So there was all these different sources of inspiration for the album, and that's, I think, also why it sounds so eclectic. You know, you have songs like All For You, which is really stripped down, and then you have songs like Hit List, which is like almost a R&B kind of track, and everything in between. We spanned a lot of different genres and styles on the album, and I think it was just a lot of fun exploring all those avenues without feeling confined to a certain genre. You know, it wasn't just a reggae album, it wasn't a reggae rock album, it was like a pop, alternative, funk, folky, everything in between. All of our styles and all of our loves of music kind of were represented in certain ways.
Yeah, we were trying to showcase like what we were capable of doing at that point. I think with that record, we had a lot of songs, so we were originally gonna make a bunch of songs and cut it down, and we got to the end of it and we're like, well, I mean, shoot, these are all like pretty good songs, I'm sure that people are gonna like them. So we decided to make it as long as it is.
Yeah, and I think just to follow up on that, I think another reason why it was so eclectic was that we wrote it over such a long period of time. I mean, as soon as Hotting Up was out, like pretty much as soon as we put it out, we started writing again. Like, I know I felt like as soon as that was done, I felt like, okay, now I feel like we're getting into the groove writing with Dave. And so it was like I pretty much started getting in the studio with Dave and MB like right off the bat, just to kind of keep my writing creative juices going like as much as I could. And I think that had nothing to do with writing for Iration songs or writing. We just were writing songs as whatever came to mind, whatever we were feeling. We're doing sessions in Santa Barbara and LA, and that's where songs like Last to Know and stuff came from, just because we were like, oh, let's just write a different song. I'd hear something on the radio that sounded like a disco song, and I'd be like, let's just go down that road and, try and make a disco beat and try and, go that way. And I think because we wrote it over such a long period of time, that's why it's so eclectic, because it was just like, it was literally right after Hotting Up was done, we toured, we came back, it was like, started writing again. And a lot of, with the past albums, I felt like we'd taken time and kind of waited to see what happened next before we started to write again. And this one was just like, let's just write and write and write and write and write. And then, yeah, like at the end of the, equation, we had like almost 20 songs, and it's like, do we put a double album out? Like, do we try to cut this down to 12 or 13 songs? And we were just like, you know what? Like, we put Hotting Up out, it had 9 songs, and that was the first album in 3 years. So we feel like we owed the fans more music, And we're like, yeah, maybe some of these songs aren't going to be the fan favorites that, like Time Bomb was or Automatic was, but like that's true to our, what we're writing and what our interests are and what our sound, is going to be going forward. So we might as well put it out and call it Iration, because it is so eclectic and it's all the things that we enjoy and all of the sounds that we kind of can span as a band. So yeah, I think that was, that basically sums it all up.
Adam, what's your favorite song from that album?
My favorite is probably Already Gold, just because it's a really fun song to play live. It has a really cool pocket bass line, and then it also has the kind of the bass dub section kind of on the bridge, which is really fun for me to play live and kind of showcases my instrument a bit. So that's probably my favorite.
And it's direct lyrical references to some of our reggae influences as well in the song.
Yeah.
I have another fan question. If you want to submit one, it's 805-225-6886. This one probably Poosh is going to have to answer. Referring to Fly With Me, what are light miles?
Let me guess, it's from Cullen. It's from Lenny, our LD. Well, light miles, it's not a real term, obviously, but light years is the correct scientific term. But
that doesn't
sound
well.
Better.
It's called
better.
Artistic license.
And everyone gets it when you say light miles. It actually, if you really break it down, it does make some sort of sense. But sometimes in lyric writing, you say things that aren't necessarily factually correct or scientifically correct, but they sound better. And sometimes you have to go with what sounds better over what is scientifically the correct term.
Well, before we go, does anybody have any shout-outs, any thank yous or anything like that to anybody from these later years? Kaysen, anything?
Yeah, I mean, shout-out to Kaiboy for sure. That guy put in, gave his life for the beginning of this band, and we wouldn't be anything like where we're at right now without him. So, yeah, big ups, Kaiboy.
MB?
I'd say shout out to Mr. Joseph King. He was a big part of Hotting Up and like Fly With Me. And I know when I joined the band, he had mixed a lot of the music you guys put out, not just live, but even like the backyard sessions and all that stuff. So then he definitely had a lot of say once King David came in, even though he was starting to get less and less involved in the studio aspect of things. I think he still had his stamp on the sound, and even that, he just like Kai, he left as well, but he has a pretty solid legacy of what he left behind for us too. And he was a big help for me too, just assimilating in the crew and making me feel welcome, and love the guy.
Mr. Poosh?
I got a couple. I'd say shout out to King David and Lincoln and JP, all the people that we've worked with in the studio. And Will Briere, our engineer. All those people are totally integral into the sound that we make and have crazy amounts of input. Not crazy, but like they have a lot of input in the albums, and more than probably we pay them to do. They take a hands-on approach, and we really appreciate all of them. So yeah, I think all of our studio and Will, Dave, Lincoln, JP, all the people that we work with.
Joe, anybody that you would like to add?
I'd probably just have to say my drumming peers that came before me, Matt Ochoa, Isad Williams, Patty Salmon, just guys like that who have been touring and recording for years before and just have the know-how and the skill, and they were always there if I had questions. So that was always comforting to have those guys having your back,
Adam Taylor, other than your choreographer, we all know that you have some of the best moves on the stage. Anybody that you would like to thank?
Yeah, I just say shout out to all of our loved ones that have always supported us, and to our fans who, enjoy the music we make. And if you're not already, follow them on the iRaiders Facebook page and enjoy the ride.
Also, shout out to our management, our manager Michael, Xavier, Alex Zarowski, all the people that kind of do all the digital stuff, social media. Obviously, Mike has been there from the very, very beginning and guided us through lots of changes in not just band members, but, all kinds of different scenarios. And he's been like the one constant since the very beginning. So shout out to Michael, our manager. And
Colin, too.
Also, shout out to, I was going to say, our crew
as
well.
That's what I was going to say, crew, because, in our early years, that was probably the toughest part of it all, was having to load our own gear and set up the stage ourselves and load out every night. It was the toughest part of the job. And now we have a stellar crew that pretty much handles all of it for us. So
yeah, McCone with the tracks too, you know, like one thing that's new that came with, along with the self-titled album is playing with backing tracks, which we've always were very hesitant to incorporate because we didn't want the sound to sound like fake or contrived. But you know, there's an art to just having certain things that supplement your live sound, and having someone on stage that's able to help run tracks and also be the guitar tech and the drum tech and the piano tech. McCone does a lot, so we appreciate you too.
Colin, our tour manager, he was one of the guys that was in the van when it crashed, and he spent a lot of nights driving, long overnight drives, and then tour managing all day long, and he sacrificed a lot, and he still has to deal with our shit every single day. So shout out to Kali.
And Peepers, you know.
Peepers, yes.
Taking over
Peepers has also been there for forever.
Joe King left quite the big shoes to fill with the front of house sound, because I think that was one of the most common, you know, praises we got was how good our sound was, usually in those, at least when I first joined the band. And so when King left, Peepers moved up to front of house, and I think he's done a hell of a job keeping that legacy of crisp, clear front of house sound and just that fat bass and like the clear drums and vocals and all that. It's an art, and Peepers does a hell of a job with that too. So,
and Nijo, we'll say Nijo too, our merch manager, who's also one of the elder statesmen of our crew. He's been slanging that merch since, you know, 2000, in that same range. So, you know, we stole him from Pepper, and we showed him a new life.
If you have a song written about you at Soundcheck, then you know you've had a hand in the journey of the band.
All right. Well, I want to thank all of you guys for being here on this nice, lovely day. And to all of our listeners out there, thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Uplifter. As always, don't forget to subscribe to our channel on YouTube. And now you can also subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcast platforms. Visit irationmusic.com for more info. And remember, when the news gets you down, you can always tune in to The Uplifter. Bye-bye. If you don't take a minute to stop and think about why, slow down, take a breath, enjoy yourself, and don't forget this. Remember to smile, remember to smile. This country proud, always pushed the limit and never could slow down. Crossed an ocean to fight a war, came back, just wasn't the same. All alone when he left.